There are opportunities in life for gaining knowledge and experience.
So let's have a conversation.
Okay. What would you like to have a conversation about?
Hey, folks, and welcome to the podcast. Today we are looking at the Coens. Finally, this is our 58th show, and the Coens haven't come up yet, which is kind of weird.
Yes.
But they only had one feature since we have begun this podcast, so I don't know.
And that one you have been talking about.
I have been talking about it, and I did rewatch it this week.
Mm-hmm.
But to continue my introduction, this is the Ballad of Buster Scruggs we're going to talk about today on Netflix and in selected theaters out there in the world. Not here, of course.
Very select theaters, I think.
Very select. Yeah. I should say that. But yeah.
It's only to be able to be eligible for the Oscars.
Yeah, I mean, probably.
That is the reason.
I guess. But I'm not sure that's the Coen. That's a Coen decision. I don't really think they care too much about that. In my head, they don't care at all.
No.
But that's okay. Because I have the utmost respect for them.
Yes.
Yeah. And I know you have too.
I do. And the weird thing about this particular movie is that they've been kind of encouraging making movies for the cinema and been against this whole streaming fad, I guess, or trend. Like along with some of the other big names like Nolan and Tarantino and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they have this thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't followed that discussion. But
we're going to talk
to that later.
Yes. Yeah. We're going to talk about that.
Mm-hmm. First of all, Rune, before we go any further, what are you drinking?
I forgot the beer today. To be fair, though, I have been drinking beer today because I went to a birthday party.
Of course you did.
And there I had a Christmas beer. Tuborg, actually.
Tuborg? All right.
Tuborg. And then we also had, another beer, like a Carlsberg. So, standard fare. Now I'm sitting here with a Modelo Masi, which is a red wine from the great year of 2017. So, Italian. It's a red
interesting
wine.
It's good. All right. Okay.
It's a little bit different. I guess it fits the Coen spirit here, like a bit of highbrow cinema.
No, let's just say you forgot the beer. What do you think?
Well, but I do have alcohol.
Yeah. Good. I am going to open my whole gun, which is, standard procedure here.
It is what it is. Yeah.
Like I said, I think last time I picked up 9 6 packs last time I went abroad. My customs maximum for Iceland. So there we go. Why go anywhere else, you know?
Yeah.
Why drink anything else?
You know, at least I am a little bit like unpredictable. Right? I am a little bit envious of you, though. But you know, it's also good with a glass of red wine.
Cheers. Cheers, Rune. So, there is news.
News.
Filmstruck is ending.
Yeah,
it's run this next week. Well, this week. What was the 25th today? We're recording, we're releasing 28th?
Yes.
Yeah. So, tomorrow, Filmstruck is ending its services.
It's just not a viable thing. Old classic films are not that important anymore.
This is the world we live in, sadly.
Yes.
We have been subscribers, basically illegally, because it's not available in our countries. But
at least we did our share to pay them. And
we have paid for the service, yes. Yeah.
So, but even
so
that couldn't, Even that couldn't do it.
Yeah, we did our best. It's sad. Mm-hmm.
Are you having a moment? Of silence for Filmstruck?
A minute's silence? What do you think? Dead air.
Dead air.
What have you been watching?
Well, I've been watching one thing that I've been pestering you with for quite a while. And that's basically it.
You said the magic word.
Yes.
Word. Mm-hmm. The Wire.
Yeah. So it's the co-writers of The Wire and Tremé, who has written The Deuce, which is a TV series about the life on The Deuce, which is a street, an area in New York. And in this, like at this time, here was prostitutes and pimps and a lot of shady stuff going on. And that's what you follow. And it's very slow. It has a lot of characters, which is one of the reasons why I was being reminded of The Wire. Because I do assume, actually, that there is a lot of characters going on, all with their very personal narratives. Am I right in assuming that?
Yeah. Tremé as well.
Yes. So so it has that style. But here, like, it just caught, like, me and Alien's attention. Because, like, it had a very strong opening. It has Maggie Gyllenhaal as the producer. And also one of the main actresses in the show. And she's playing a prostitute who is a solo. So she doesn't have a pimp and is trying to survive on her own. And there's a lot of like complicated stuff going on here, because you have this feeling that prostitution is a choice and not so much something that you're necessarily forced into. And you know, it's just a very hard subject matter to watch something about, and there's a lot of conflicting thoughts in your head, you know, while watching.
It's an interesting time. It's the 70s, mm-hmm. yeah?
Mm-hmm. It is.
Well, the up until now, they did The Wire, which is modern-day Baltimore, and then Tremé, which is New Orleans in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be interesting to watch that. I'm looking forward to it. I read today that they are doing a season 3.
Yes.
Which will be the last one. You have to give them that they know how to end things and before it gets too far.
Yeah. You know, we made it all the way through the first season, and that one takes place in the 70s. Then we watched the first episode of the second season, and that one is 10 years later.
Okay.
And it's basically just, I mean, without spoiling anything, because, I mean, you see the nature of the show. It's very much a glimpse in, like, at a time, like at one specific time frame, and what happen there. And then it ends, many loose ends, and all of a sudden, 10 years later, and you see what happened. By action rather than actually seeing the progression.
Same characters generally. Then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, the weird thing, though, is that most people has just changed their hairstyle. You know?
And well, people did that in the 80s.
I mean, they
well,
did.
In every decade,
they did.
Really.
But it's just like everyone is just a little bit different. You know, same, but different. And, like, I have to say, James Franco is playing a dual role as a twin. So you have the pleasure of two James Francos in this series.
Well, three, if you count the producer.
Executive producer.
Yeah. I guess I have to start respecting that guy. I mean, he's now worked with the Coens, and he's worked with, what are they called? David Simon and George Pelicanos, these guys who make
Harmony Korine.
Yeah.
Spring Breakers.
I haven't seen that yet. It's on my list.
But the really fun thing about him being playing this twin is that in the beginning, of course, you realize, okay, it's the same actor and they're in the same scene and how are they doing this stuff? At least me being me, looking for that stuff. But after the third episode, I completely accepted this. You know, and I remember towards the end of the show, I looked to Aileen and was like, I actually do not think of this, like the performance of James Franco as one person. I do see them as separate characters. And that's quite an achievement.
So he gets to flex his acting muscles quite a bit.
And you can really tell the difference, even though they look exactly alike. You know,
it's the same. Yeah. Well, for some reason, they look alike. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I'm intrigued, but it's not this kind of series that is really having you grab onto your seats or anything. I mean, it's more of a slow burn.
Of course, Rune, you got to watch The Wire and Tremé. Yeah. And Tremé, you can even start there because there's so much music there.
Yeah.
I think you'll love it. I mean, it's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, now you have seen the work of these people. Yes. What they're about.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm intrigued. One word of advice, though, being a parent, I don't know if you got my message about it, but...
I did.
Well, maybe we should just play that message.
There's quite a lot of explicit content. And Reshkwa has been a little bit sick lately. And she woke up at like 10 o'clock, came into the living room and climbed up between us. And we thought, okay, she'll just fall asleep. But then it's kind of, well, a sex scene. And she was very interested and was like, what is that? What are they doing?
And I felt like the worst parent ever in that moment. I felt like this is the first time where we did something maybe a little bit bad. Mainly because the next day she came to me and I was home with her because she had fever and she was like, shouldn't we watch TV? Maybe that thing where they take their clothes off and lie down. And I was just trying to say, let's watch Barney and Friends or some other stuff instead.
I had a similar moment this morning when I was browsing Netflix with Swimmerly, and he just tells me what he wants to see. And every time there's some kind of a monster or whatever, he wants to see that. Okay. And only that. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
And he caught The Incredible Hulk with Edward Norton. So we watched that. Oh. And since then, he's been the green guy, you know, all day. Yeah. And he's been running Hulk. Around in his... all day. So I guess we're not perfect parents then.
I guess not. I mean, you make him watch superhero movies. I'm making her watch porn. No, I mean, not really, but
I don't know which is worse.
Anyway, what have you been watching? Have you been up to something
exciting? I went to Budapest, Hungary. Mm-hmm. As you know, because of my teeth are not in the best shape. I don't know. I always brush it. I'm not one of those people that just doesn't take care of them. It's just more genetic and all kinds of stuff like that. So yeah. I had I'm getting 17 new crowns.
Quite a procedure.
Think about that for a while. 17
I did see
teeth.
A before or like meanwhile picture of your teeth.
Wasn't that fun?
Yeah, that was really fun. Yeah.
It was kind of a Thanksgiving-y, horror-y thing.
Yeah.
See. Yeah. I'm going back in a week and staying another week till then it's done. But during that time, I watched with my wife, who came with me for the first week. We watched some French thing. I forget what it's called on Netflix. It's not that bad. No, it's nothing important. But okay. We watched season 3 of Broadchurch. Now, you know us. Yes. We like the noir. We like the Nordic noir mm-hmm. and all that. This is certainly that. And it's fairly predictable. Which we take comfort in, of course. Mm-hmm. But it was actually really, really good as well. And it is about this woman gets raped. Mm-hmm. And we get to see what happens in the aftermath, like details and the whole exam and what happens to victims of rape and mm-hmm. how the town takes it and the society and how the investigation goes and it was really detailed and very, very good. Very good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you seen this?
Yes. Yeah. I think I even talked about it probably a year ago or something on this show. I'll have to do some digging.
Yeah.
I was in the camp of very predictable and also I don't remember quite right now, but I do have the feeling that they were misleading you for a long time.
I mean, it's an investigation. Things happen. You know, you can argue that the Nordic noir genre is very predictable, even at the best of times.
Maybe.
But predictable things is what people take comfort in, isn't it? People like their superhero films and their TV comedies and stuff like that.
And feel good about themselves when they realize who the killer is. And the first
from that perspective, mm-hmm. perspective of the victim and all that, mm-hmm. how the workings around this whole thing take place. I thought mm-hmm. that was very interesting.
Yeah.
And I can recommend it. I don't really remember the first two seasons. They weren't really, that mm-hmm. memorable, but I can recommend the third one.
Yeah. Yeah. I won't comment anymore. I can't remember what it was I didn't like about it, but I was let down by it. We watched the whole thing though, so we made mm-hmm. it all the way through.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is she called? Olivia?
Sophie?
Olivia Colman.
Yeah.
I'll just always love her for her role in Peep Show, so I can watch whatever she does. I will. Otherwise, I've been fairly quiet. You know, it's been fairly traumatic with all TV.
Yes, of course. You didn't watch anything in the plane? Like on the plane?
No. I was traveling with Wizz Air. They don't even have, you can't even tilt your seat back.
Okay.
Much less, much less watch anything. Well, I did take the computer and we were watching Broadchurch partly there as well. So and the IT crowd. Sorry.
Okay.
That is sometimes very funny and sometimes just god awful. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's a whole spectrum.
Yeah. I can add that I tried watching Deadpool 2, but it was again one of those moments. It was when I left Iceland and Resko was sitting next to me and was wide awake. And when I started Deadpool, I thought maybe she was just going to drift off or look at her own screen. But but then the decapitation started happening and limbs flying off and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And I thought maybe this is not something I should sit here and watch right next to her. So I haven't watched it yet.
Okay.
Also, just a quick side note, something has happened in my life here this weekend. Also, we went, like Elin and I, to a spa.
Yeah.
For a day after work. And Resko has been home alone here with her grandmother for the first time. Without us.
It's the first overnight.
It's the first overnight.
Yeah. Away from you guys. Mm-hmm. How did that go?
It went perfectly well. There was no problem. not at all. But I mean, my mom came here and stayed in this apartment with Reskva. So, yeah. But we were at a spa, getting some
living it up.
Treatments and a creek experience and lying in hot water and getting some really good food and stuff like that. And I felt as if I was in that show with Frasier where he's at a day spa with Niles and always trying to get to that other door, like through that other, like a platinum or gold door. So actually, while we were there, when we went to sleep, we decided to watch that one episode. So we actually watched Frasier while at a spa, the show where they're at a spa. It was nice.
Fantastic. We have a Frasier connection in this week's film as well.
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do.
So, So speaking of that, should we get into actually talking about the Ballad of Buster Scruggs?
Let's go to that now.
Things have a way of escalating out here in the West.
My name is Ozymandias, King of Kings.
That man is a wonder. I will just have to see him.
Crazy business.
First time.
That was a clip from The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, a new film by the Coen brothers directly released onto Netflix. And this is a movie that actually contains six short films, vignettes, about life in the Old West. And all of the movies are standalone. They deal with kind of the same subject matter, which is death and mortality in the Wild West. But other than that, they're not really connected. And
Or are they?
Or are they? Hmm. That's where you come in, I guess.
Well, so they're not. Not really.
I don't think so.
They're thematically connected, like you say.
Yeah.
That's very true.
Yeah. So actually, we have these six films, and it starts with a shot of a book. So you could say this movie is bookended with an actual book.
Yes.
And the first story that we get into is The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Then we go to another one called Near Algodones. Then one called Meal Ticket. Another one called All Gold Canyon. Then The Gal Who Got Rattled. And finally, The Mortal Remains. Unique cast for all of them, as I said previously. So I was thinking, shouldn't we go into it like one segment at a time?
Sure. Yeah, that sounds that like a plan.
Would make sense. And then maybe take it at the end as a complete feature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They got me right off the bat with Tim Blake Nelson. How can you not love that guy? Actually,
the guy who plays Buster Scruggs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually saw him in The Incredible Hulk this morning with somebody.
Okay.
Playing an awful,
scientist?
Awful role. Yeah, some scientist, some guy like that. Yeah.
Never mind.
Never mind. But ever since Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, he's one of those characters, one of those actors that plays characters in the Coen films that you just absolutely adore. Mm-hmm. That's me. Mm. That's me. I love him from that film. So classic. Kind of connected to Hail Caesar, I would say.
Yeah, you have the singing and you have the quirkiness and
natural continuum going on there from Hobie Doyle. Mm. of course, I saw Hail's Hughes the night before, so it kind of works for me that way.
Yeah.
Singing Cowboy. Yeah. It's kind of slapsticky, isn't it?
Yes, but, you know, I really enjoyed this first segment. I was completely on board here. I thought they started it off with a bang, like being funny, being like quirky, slapsticky also, but also just showing the consequences of the Wild West. It's so, like, even though people get killed quickly here, you get this sense of, like, it's a live or die
environment
to be in. And the whole story is, like, with him being cocky and really quick and really doing this. And as soon as you're not quick enough, you're dead. And that's okay, because that is the name of the game in the Wild West. So, like, everybody is in on this premise. Mm-hmm. And that's a very, like, it's something that resonated with me. You know, like this.
Yeah, they set that up nicely there in the first one.
Mm-hmm. Comedic way. Like, not being too grim and dark about it, but it's like, yeah. Either you live or you die.
He's narrating as well and breaking the fourth wall and everything. And it's both a nice continuum from Hail Caesar as well. Like you say, a good setup for the whole film. Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm told where I read that it was supposed to be a miniseries.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
On Netflix. I don't see that. It doesn't feel like that to me at all.
Oh, I really see this.
Yeah.
But let's get back to that when we get through all of them and talk about the package.
So number two is Near Algodones. With James Franco.
Yeah. As a bank robber.
Yeah.
Trying to rob a banker who is crazy and knows how to protect himself.
It has some nice visuals, that one. Especially when he comes, right in the beginning, comes to the bank.
Mm-hmm.
I can't be a color commenting guy because of my color blindness.
Yeah.
It felt beautiful there in the beginning. And visually good, really, really, really well set up.
A lot of this stuff is very beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I loved seeing Steven Root there. He always gets me. He's fabulous.
Yeah.
As the bank teller.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Otherwise, this was the least impressive one for me. And it's not because of James Franco. It just didn't feel profound in any way.
Mm. No, but it had the same, subject matter, of the first one, and you know, also to me, it this is the shortest one of them, and it actually didn't say too much else than what the first one did. You know, you live and you die. The only thing I could take away from this one was that James Franco was always living in the moment, even though he was about to die. Like, he was a marked man after he got captured. Then he got saved, but he still was a marked man. And then you have this one, scene at the end where he looks at a woman, a beautiful woman. And he's happy when he dies.
Yeah, okay. So you're going to go full spoiler.
Yeah, I think here. So.
Okay.
I think so.
I tried to stop you there. But
okay. Well, we can rewind.
So to sum it up, visually good.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing to complain about, but not really spectacular for me and otherwise.
No.
Which leads us to the third one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is called Meal Ticket, and it stars Liam Neeson and a guy called Harry Melling, an Englishman, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
He stars as a actor who does monologues out of a carriage.
Yeah.
He has no hands or feet.
Mm-hmm.
And this one just really got me. I mean, the Coens are known for their, I guess you could say, stylistic approach, mostly. But somehow, as I've said before, that their characters live on and you love them. Mm-hmm. I can go better into that later.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But this one really, I mean, wow, this one really got me. It was just so, evoking some real emotions, you could say.
Okay.
It did that for me, at least.
Yeah. So, so it's about Liam Neeson, who is traveling around with this crippled performer, actor, who is telling stories from what Shakespeare and also the Gettysburg speech, address, yeah, and some other thing. You remember which one? Well, anyway,
I didn't notice that really.
No, but it's a bit. Like this highbrow art, in a
entertainment
way.
Entertainment in the very lowbrow Wild West.
Yes. And it's fascinating. They travel from town to town, and like slowly they realize that fewer and fewer people are showing up. Yeah.
And then something interesting happens, which changes the course, and inevitably there is death.
Yes.
Somewhere along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Is that where we really
leave it?
Yeah. I'm going to try.
Yeah.
I'm going to try a little bit.
All right.
Because people, just go watch it and then come back if you haven't seen it. I mean, yeah. Go watch it.
But, you know, I felt like this was very long, very slow, and not very interesting at all.
Okay.
Because it seemed like such a one-note thing to say. Like, it seemed like the message was very clear about, like, art and where to, what to aim for. And, pleasing art, you could say the whole superhero thing that draws people in, you know, and then you have other kinds of art that doesn't, and at some point you need to sacrifice. And they just took a long time hammering this point home. And I was bored. I'm sorry.
This is where
it really it dipped for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not for me.
Third one, it
really
dipped.
Really yes. Worked for me. Okay. It's not really an allegory. It's just show business, isn't it?
It is show business. Yeah,
yeah.
It is. It is just back then, and it was the same. People.
You can say that there's a message to this film, a bigger message, a unified message, you could say, but it has different categories. This could be a show business thing. Well, yeah. It is show, but it is an impresario played by Liam Neeson, and
But I just stumbled upon a quote from, I think, Joel Cohen also, where he's saying, because of like the funding situation of this movie, that they turn to Netflix because the big established franchises are pretty much into Marvel comics and that kind of stuff now.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like quite directly like not an attack, but just a comment about this situation.
That's a very good point. And it really fits. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
So they spent like a good half hour on hammering that thing home.
I just thought it was really good. It helped me all the way through.
Yeah.
That guy, Harry Melling, was just so good. And it just, and the exciting incident, the twist there, it's just so, it's so funny.
Yeah.
On top of all this melancholy, a lot of melancholy there.
Yeah.
In this one.
You know, it's significantly longer than the two first ones, the prior ones. But it's not the longest, though. It's not the longest.
No.
But it's, it definitely feels longer. And maybe it's like it more if they had tightened it up a little bit.
It's not as layered as the fifth one. No. I'll give you that. Yeah. But I see your point here.
Hmm. Yeah. But...
But I was all glued right. to the screen.
Yes, you were excited. I was also excited by the end, you know. But I could have had a little bit of it cut out. Anyway,
I thought there was some nice editing stuff going on as well there mm-hmm. when they were showing the progression of showing how he was these repetitions mm-hmm. every night and so. Good work for me.
Yes. Okay, good.
Number four.
Old Gold Canyon.
Yeah, this was my favorite, of course.
This is where, yours as well. Yeah, I mean, of course. Wow. This is one of the reasons why I rate this movie high, as high as I do. Because who doesn't love watching Tom Waits on screen? You know, he rarely gets the opportunity to have a leading role. Like the last thing I remember is like Down by Law from the 80s by Jim Jarmusch. Yeah. And here he is just as good as any actor out there.
Yeah, and he totally carries this almost alone. Carries all the way through the
whole film, and you're with him. It's such a great portrayal of a prospector who is looking for gold and being kind of insane, kind of crazy, but has done this for a long time and is completely gathered and does things systematically in order to find that pocket. Mr. Pocket,
yes. Just his voice.
It works. And it's beautifully shot. Again, we also have some connection with some Twin Peaksy stuff with the owls are watching. Mm-hmm. No, not really. But there's
untouched nature there.
Beautiful. Very
naturistic, natural shots. It's not even been touched by the indigenous people of the area. It's just totally untouched. And I wrote down, fucking brilliant. The acting is awesome. It's moving and funny.
Yeah.
Visually great. And symbolism, the owl, of course, mm-hmm. must symbolize there is mm-hmm. someone watching him.
Yes.
Probably.
Mm. And it's, you know, it's poetic also. And, you know, one thing that the owl does here is it actually gives this character some, character. You know, it seems like you actually get to know Tom Waits' character end.
I agree.
Many of the other stories where it seems quite shallow, like because they want this one story to work. Here, you actually get into how this guy has lived all his life when he crawls up on top of a tree and tries to steal all like this owl's eggs. And decides to put back most of them because everybody has to live. And it's like, you get a feeling of who he is. And that's really beautiful.
I guess it's also tough to do that in a short, because these are shorts.
It is.
Going back to number three, you really get a sense of the plight of Harry Melling as this performer.
Mm-hmm.
I think that maybe I didn't say that quite clearly. You get a sense of his predicament and just his life, and it's just so sad,
mm-hmm.
and therefore brilliant for me. But okay, back to Tom Waits. Yeah. This is the best one. I absolutely loved this one.
Mm-hmm. I would go back and watch this one on its own. You know, it's it's that good.
I actually went back today and watched the sixth one again because I was getting a little tired there towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of kind of, you know, it got away from me a bit. So I watched mm-hmm. the sixth again. But mm-hmm. but yeah, definitely, it is. I think we agree the best one.
Yeah, by a long shot, I think. Actually,
I don't know. Tom Waits being there is definitely yeah. a factor, I think.
And you know, I'm biased because I love anything he does. But I mean, yeah. had it not been well made, you know, yeah. then I'm not someone who would just cherish him for being on screen, you know.
And it's quite an achievement. It's a guy digging. He's digging,
yes.
and he's going to the creek and seeing if there's some gold there. Yeah. Digging again, and it's just basically digging.
Yeah, digging and digging.
Talking to Mr. Pocket occasionally, seeing an owl. Yeah,
and that is also brilliant, you know, because it creates so much character for him to get all this, this conversation with the gold.
As well as being ominous.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
There we go. The fifth one. Yeah.
The girl who got rattled.
Yeah.
Oh, the drama. I, this one was good for me as well.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I was quite happy with this one.
Yeah.
Actually, the actress Zoe Kazan,
mm-hmm.
Granddaughter of Elia Kazan, who directed On the Waterfront, for instance. He's a proper one of the big ones.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she was on Marc Maron the other day, and she's quite impressionable. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, she's quite. Yeah. I like her. She was also in. Oh my god!
You're putting yourself on the spot here.
Christ.
I love it's not me asking, and
She was in The Big Sick. And she was quite good. Yes, okay. I liked her there as well. Mm. So, but you know, this is anyways. The drama. It was a more layered story, the longest story up to six, and more of a kind of a constructed narrative, you could say.
And more of a tale where you see where people live with their choices and death and like the consequences you can
I mean they could have skipped the whole like having dinner scene really yes. they could have done that and make the whole story more similar to other ones but I'm kind of glad they didn't.
So what was her name? Zoe Kazan. Yeah. And her brother was leaving Idaho. Yeah,
was it Idaho?
I think so.
But they were on the Oregon Trail.
To go on the Oregon Trail to Oregon. And her brother had business prospects in Oregon and also marriage prospects for his sister. But turns out that he didn't make it to Oregon. And his sister has to deal with... payments and her future and how to get by and their dog or his dog. Yeah. President Pierce. Yeah.
Talk about your ominous presence. I looked this guy up, President Pierce. Franklin Pierce was a president of the United States between 1853 and 1857.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the, historians call him like one of the worst presidents in history.
Yeah.
He was against the abolitionist movement of abolition of slavery. He was against that.
Yeah,
he was a heavy drinker.
Mm-hmm.
All his three sons died very young. Okay. His wife was in poor mental health, and he's not well remembered for anything good. So, talk about your ominous presence, Rune.
Yeah,
with the dog there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. and this dog continues to bark and be in a new, yeah. nuisance to everyone else.
He's a constant reminder, if you know President Franklin Pierce, what the hell is gonna happen here? And it can't be good.
No.
If you know that. But I thought this was a really good, well-constructed, and I don't know, you got the religious thing in there a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. One conversation.
But they're building towards that as well for the sixth. But you can see that she's pious. I mean, by her demeanor the whole way through, can't you?
Yeah. Yeah, you can see that. And yeah, I also enjoyed this one. It was a long novella film almost. I say it run longer than like probably approximately like 40 minutes or something like that.
Maybe so, yeah. Maybe so.
But even so, I didn't feel like you got much into the characters. Like, you know, I never got to feel for any of them. Like, you don't sit back and get overwhelmed with emotion. For instance, if one person dies or something happens, it's more like the events keep on like progressing, and that's what happens in this world.
It's very matter of fact. That's how the Coens and maybe that's do
also, yeah, and maybe that's also the whole point of this, you know, by talking so much about, well, mortality and how it is matter of fact.
Yeah. They are not religious people, the Coens. No one is going to tell me they're religious.
No. You know, one thing I really enjoy, like with this one, but also the first and the second one, the violence, how that is so quick and precise. You know, it seems real. Those kind of violent scenes with Native Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. It was engaging, but then again, once the final event happens, you're just like, yeah, all right, so that happened.
I also thought you got a good feel for the time in that one, because of the wagons and the wagon trail and Bill Hack having been doing this for 10 years, escorting wagons this westward, the Oregon Trail. And this is something that happened. I mean, thousands and millions of people, you know, went this way and settled in the West.
Yeah, they did. That's also something I noticed when they had that conversation, like 15 years and there was no thought of actually giving that up unless he started a new kind of life. He would just continue to be on this trail for the rest of his life, basically.
Yeah.
This guy had a partner who was significantly older, you know?
Yeah. You can really see why in this era, in this this place, the West, you can really see why people turn to religion. Yeah. Because you can must be a meaning somewhere very very quickly.
Yeah, yeah. But it also just seemed a little bit like, I mean, of course you grieve the dead, but you also just have this like, this happens, you know. Even for the sister,
for everyone, like,
and maybe it's kind of a nice way of looking at it, you know, like life was just not as precious back then. No, was it?
I wasn't there. I mean, but I mean, like infant death was much higher than it is today, and so I guess you must. You must think differently of it somewhat. You could say that. But shall we move on to number six?
Sure.
The Mortal Remains.
Yes. All taking place in a carriage towards Fort Morgan, hotel.
Fort Morgan, yeah.
Yeah.
So here we have, I read a mixture of stagecoach, John Ford's stagecoach from 1939, and the Phantom Carriage by Victor Sjöström from 1920, I think it was, or something like that.
Okay, yeah.
Both of which I've seen. Phantom Carriage recently, I told you about that.
Yeah.
It's very kind of gothic, wasn't it?
It was.
This one.
And it was definitely surreal. And
the color palette and everything was
especially when they have a few shots outside of the carriage and you see that the carriage driver is not stopping for anyone.
Exactly.
Everything was you knew something was not right here.
But did you though? I don't think carriages would stop in this environment there for just anything, you know?
What about a peeing break or something? No.
What about a
peeing break?
Maybe. I'll tell you what, though. I was in the dentist chair for 3 hours with an open mouth.
Yeah.
Straight. No breaks.
Mm-hmm.
With a drill.
Yeah.
Going.
Yeah. Yeah.
For 180 minutes straight.
Yeah.
So,
and you managed?
Don't mention any breaks to me.
No.
I managed.
Yeah.
Good.
I'm glad you managed.
Yeah. Did you notice that in the sixth one, the setting felt constructed? I mean, there were two houses across the street from the hotel when they arrived.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see they weren't hiding it. They were just... they were just front sides.
Yeah.
There was no depth to the images. Yeah. It was just a front. Mm. You could see it.
Yeah. No, I didn't notice those two, but I did notice the hotel that was definitely otherworldly.
I don't know. I think you can.
Do you usually have a staircase that leads up to a bright, bright light?
I guess you're right about that. but still, I mean, it could be just two bounty hunters like going about their business.
Bounty hunters that call themselves light. Soul Reapers.
I mean, you can like unsettle people and.
Yeah, you can. I think it's more than hinted at that these three people who are with the two soul reapers are in fact dead.
Maybe.
Yeah.
It kind of like it bookends the story quite nicely. Because the main theme is like death, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And that there is something afterwards. At least you can... walk up a staircase and transition into the light, as Buster Scruggs did. But he decided to take another path.
Did a little differently.
Yes, a little differently.
Mm.
Yeah, I appreciate the surreal nature of this last piece. I appreciate some of the dialogue. Especially the stuff that revolves around death and the transition from life to death.
Yeah.
I think that was well done. It was, some interesting thoughts to put into my head there. But again, other than that, it didn't hit me. It didn't take me away.
You're talking about the sixth.
Yes, the sixth
not,
one.
Not the
yes,
movie the in general. One. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah.
I was, like I said, tired last night when I was watching it. And
I started being fatigued by watching these. Also because you need to get into different stories, six different stories nonetheless.
Yeah.
With different characters.
It's like 133 minutes or something. Mm-hmm. So you need to be there. But I decided to watch it again this morning so that I would be could talk about it. But yeah, I see your point there.
Mm. So that was all six of these vignettes about the old West and life there. Mm-hmm. So earlier you said that it was supposed to have been a miniseries. And
what I read.
Yes, and I've heard that as well. And, you know, I do think it would have benefited from not trying to be this feature film, because as we've both said, like you become fatigued by the end of it because there's so much content in here. Yet all of it seems a little bit flat to me. Like you see the themes, you like thematically, but it's there's no depth for the most part.
Well, I disagree.
Yeah. I don't feel like there's too much depth. And, you know, for me, the three that worked best was the two first ones, which were short, and the one with Tom Waits. They had what I associate with Coen, the Coen brothers, I mean, especially Buster Scruggs, the first one, it had some like a bang right from the beginning, and you were in it, you were in the world, it set the stage. And I would have liked something like that, maybe to be more of a like a one episode, but it was too short to be an episode. It was more like this like short film, like how much was it, like maybe 10 minutes, something like that. 15. And had this been a miniseries where you might have had to put it all up a little bit more tightly to be 25 minutes, half an hour per episode, some of the longer
ones. So you
ones
mean making
that,
them a little bit longer?
Yeah, making those that work really well, maybe a little bit longer to get a little bit more depth to the characters, like spend a little bit more time to get to know the characters before you kill people off. And some of the longer ones, trim them a bit to be just like a little bit tighter, because I was often just getting a little bit bored and tired of watching it. And I think it would have benefited from having maybe like six of these, 25 minutes a piece or something, and then make them like do it for real, you know?
I don't think they would ever have done that.
No?
I don't know. I completely disagree with you.
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah,
it's always good in the
yes,
this podcast.
Yes, it's always good.
I think it kind of begins on the third one for me.
Yeah,
I love the Buster Scruggs one. If I'm going to critique the setup here, I would say that the second one was unnecessary at all.
Yeah,
wasn't necessary at all. So if I wanted to make it a little bit shorter, I would take that out. It didn't serve a purpose for me. But I don't see them as a mini series. I don't think the Coens are mini series people. I mean, I guess they have supported some like the Fargo.
Yeah.
I guess they have
that they
produced somewhat or something, endorsed it some way.
Yeah.
But I don't see it working that way.
But you don't see
I'm
it as
really
a feature film either.
There.
Right,
I'm really happy. They're like testing the form.
Yeah, but it's like
a
collection
of stories.
It's a collection of six short films. And
but for
some
me, it
further,
has
like,
it works as a whole.
Yeah.
It works as a whole. It has a gallery of Coen characters and Coen stories. And I think the West, Wild West, that era is just perfect for what the Coens do, which is explore humanity.
Yeah.
And this is such an interesting era in the way that the West was basically ungoverned, lawless.
Mm-hmm.
So when there's no rules, people are just what they are.
Yeah.
So you get to play with the characters and just make them do whatever the hell you want them to do, which is what people do. If there are no rules to follow, people are just people, animals, basically. And this is kind of what they're saying here. There's so much violence. It's bleak.
Yeah.
It's bleak. That's another point I want to make. It's very, very bleak. Everything that happens here, people are dying all over, but somehow they frame it with their like Coen-esque magic to make it funny and nice as well.
Yeah, but I think that is counterproductive actually to some of the stories here, because it becomes less involved. You don't feel the seriousness of what's happening, because it becomes a little bit of a joke. You know, for instance, in the fourth one with the Oregon Trail one.
Yeah.
Where you actually get some time to try to care for some of the characters, and they even set up a love story, partly at least. And you know, it, the death scenes are still played a little bit for laughs, in my opinion, because it's so like, it's still comical, like morbidly comical. And, I don't know, it just becomes this thing that doesn't really move you. It feels a little bit irrelevant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. No.
Disagree.
Yeah.
I disagree. I know it looks like a collection of cliches. You have a lot of cliches. They know what they're doing in that regard. You have the singing cowboy, and you have the prospector, and you have the guy living rough in the sixth one, for instance, with his traps and all that. You have the pious lady and in Tyne Daly. I actually, I think they're playing a little bit, playing with the genre of the Western, but using different genres in each one to play with the Western. I mean, we have slapstick.
Yeah,
we have like this romantic, naturistic thing. We have drama. We have melancholy, and we have gothic horror.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's totally relevant.
Yeah,
absolutely relevant. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you could say. I mean, Richard Brody in the New Yorker says that it's a political message. I can see that. I can see that, all the chaos there, because if this is a chaotic era and you can see the chaos everywhere, like with the death all the time, you could say it's a comment on 2018 even. The characters, I see your point there.
I do
But like I said, I think I said earlier that, well, I'm on record saying Wes Anderson is all style and no substance. And I guess someone would say the same about the Coens. I disagree. There are so many characters in their past that I just absolutely love. Even George Clooney, which I don't rate really highly as an actor. But he is so good in those films. I mean, their films are uneven.
There's always quality
Burn
to them.
After reading this week.
Okay.
It wasn't that good. My wife loves it, but it has some really funny scenes, but it wasn't, it's not really.
It's like sometimes you hit and sometimes you miss with Coen's. I don't love all of their movies. I even don't really love The Big Lebowski. I appreciate it for what it is.
I love it.
You know, I appreciate it. And it's also partly due to the fact that I really enjoy watching him.
John Goodman? Jeff Bridges?
Jeff Bridges.
Steve Buscemi? Okay.
God. That was embarrassing. Jeff Bridges, of course. But also the other ones. And Jesus, of course, like John Turturro is amazing. You know, there's a lot of amazing stuff there. But as film as a whole, it's more like the vignettes. Yeah, but it's like the vignettes that you get. Like, it's the sketches that actually get you.
But what I'm saying is that it paints a unified picture of this era and this place. If you take out number two, I don't mind it, but I don't need it, number two.
No.
Let me just say one thing about The Big Lebowski. My son, he peed on my rug this week. He did.
Yeah.
How fitting is that? He must have known.
He
peed on my rug downstairs. There's a rug in the living room. And he did so willingly. Yeah. Knowingly. Knowing it was the wrong thing to do. I mean, this aggression will not stand, man.
Yeah. What did you do? did you...
He was going to go to take a shower with me.
Okay.
But there was consequences for that. I mean, we both saw it. And we saw that he knew what he was doing, you know. And he was about to go to take a shower. I said no shower. Okay. You're not coming with.
You can roll around on the shower on the blanket, the rug.
No, I mean, there at some point there has to be consequences, you know.
Yes. Yeah.
But he hasn't really impulse control at this point. He's not even three, but
exactly.
He knows it's wrong.
It's wrong.
Damn it.
Yeah. Oh, but, yeah.
Yeah, what were we talking about?
just talking about the relevance of this film, even.
If you think about a higher relevance or a message, political message even, you can see that if you try.
Yes. But that's the.
I think it's a unified picture of the West.
You really have to try, though.
Yeah. I guess.
And I do feel that a lot of people put more thought into it, maybe, than what is there, because it's the Coens. You know, you expect something more, but it seems much less to me, and it doesn't seem that profound. I see your point, though, with. Like different kinds of takes on the Western genre and painting this picture of like a whole of the old West, that there are different. Yeah.
Not a whole. It's never going to be a whole picture. It's part
of the picture then.
Parts and parts and maybe how we now see the West, this era. We don't really know. It kind of exists in memory. It exists in popular culture.
Mm. So really. Much of this is it seems so familiar. I was even telling, I was also saying to Elin when we got to the third act or like this third one, like these kinds of theaters, like traveling theaters, it's so well established. Like you just... Except like, yeah, that was probably how it was back then, that people were traveling around with the carriages with these traveling theaters. And everything within this world, you can pinpoint that to the, like the Western, like a Western, like the old West. It's that unique and that characteristic And you know, like, credits where credits due, you know, like, all of it seemed really authentic here.
Yeah. But, you know, this is the Coen way, though. It's absurd as well. Yeah. So much of this is just absurd.
I'm going to say one thing, though.
Okay.
One thing that I was reminded all the time. And I'm sorry that I'm bringing in other kinds of mediums here, but
the Red Dawn thing, or
Red Dead Redemption 2.
Red Dead Redemption.
Yes,
okay.
because you know, I was, and also Elin was always looking at this film and saying, "Wow, this is Red Dead Redemption," because it's the same setting, it's the same scenery. It's the same types of type of stories. Also, in this world, you're traveling around as like an outlaw who is trying to slowly fit in, because there's no law, as you say, in the Old West. But at a certain point, it starts changing, and society is being formed a little bit more. And this is the sweet spot of that transition that this game takes place in. And you're basically just free to wander around in this, well, Old West. And you encounter strangers in this world. And there's also a larger narrative throughout the story. I haven't gotten that far in this game because it's extremely long. It's like it has a storyline of around 60 hours. So it'll take a while. But you encounter strangers, and those strangers reminded me so much of these small vignettes, because you don't get a lot of insight into the characters themselves, but it fleshes out the world that you're traveling around in. And, you know, that game gave me much more of a sense of what it is to be in this Western world, because you should probably read up on it a little bit. It is a huge blockbuster game, and it's I would say a little bit of a turning point, because it's a blockbuster game that tries to be realistic, and it's not meaningless violence that's in there, but it is violence because it's the Old West and people live and die, as you see in this stuff. And you know, it just seemed like, to me, that I was seeing parts of this game in this film, actually. But because it's a film, you want more character development. You want more out of it than just like the setting. And what a game can do is put you into that setting and make you feel the environment much more, and like how it is to be there. So, you know, not to take something away from the Coens because of the game, but I do think that playing or experiencing this game will bring you kind of the same thought process that you go through watching this Coen short film collection. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
I
think you make a good point. I haven't played the game.
No.
I will say that in parts 3, 4, and 5, which is the heart of the film, you get character development. You get a sense of the characters, really. I think for me, most emotionally engaging was 3.
Yeah,
that's for me. Mm-hmm. And you get like Tom Waits, and you get like the novella there in the 5th.
Mm-hmm.
But okay,
yeah,
your point is taken and noted.
Yeah, I just needed to put it out there because it's one of those big westerns. Also, now it seems a little bit like peculiar, actually, that the Coen brothers comes out with this western tale as well at the same time where this thing comes out, because you don't see a lot of westerns. You don't see a lot of Westerns, and it's like these twos that is always like there's always coming two out. And I would say like the other one would probably be that game.
I see. Okay.
It is.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's point taken.
At least it's a high recommendation for me, you know. And I'm intrigued with the world that the Coen brothers are portraying here.
It's quite a big production, Lex, especially the fifth one, I would say.
Yeah.
It's, it's production.
Yeah.
If there's one thing I want to say, like, in the end here, the Coen characters, I just saw one scene from Fargo last weekend. Marge Gunderson meeting Mike or Steve, someone. At the Radisson for lunch, and the characters are memorable.
Yeah.
I think there are going to be characters from this so that are going to be memorable. Certainly, Tom Waits. I suspect that this one is going to be a slow burn in their canon. Like Hail Caesar. I rewatched that, like I told you.
Yeah.
That's just so fucking good. That's just such a love letter to the era while making so much fun of it, like this one. So it's fairly similar approach, I would say.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think
I
maybe
would have
it's
liked a bigger narrative, though. I would have liked something to sink your teeth in more, and I'm not quite buying the format here. Like even though it's different takes on it, on the Western genre, I was a little bit annoyed that you didn't get more of Buster Scruggs, for instance, or that there wasn't a longer narrative.
Now they've tried it. Now they tried to do an anthology film. So, I guess there's that.
Yes. To me, it just seems like you say, a collection of short films. And you could basically watch them in any way you see fit.
I was thoroughly entertained. Yeah. It's 4 stars for me. I'm quite happy with it. And, a good evening all around.
Yeah. For me, I finally landed on 3 stars, but most of it comes from Tom Waits. Tom Waits, yes. But I was also thinking, okay, I really liked 3 of them.
Mm-hmm.
So that fitted with 3 stars. And then the other ones, there was definitely something, you know, to like about it, you know, but it just didn't resonate with me. I didn't feel it. And, you know, I was just half entertained, really.
All right.
Throughout it. And you know, I do like Coen films, you know, but this was not it for me. And, looking at the ratings on, Letterboxd, it seems like it's very much a 4-star film for most people, but definitely not above that. So like you can see the histogram here.
I can see people having problems with the format, and
it's problematic to give it a 5-star rating, I think. Because it is experimental in nature, which is probably also something that Netflix allows people to do, something experimental. You could argue that a big studio would probably not back this kind of production and put it to the cinemas. Maybe, but then again, you have the Coen brothers, and I mean that name draws in a crowd anyway. But it is experimental, and you know you can applaud them for that, definitely.
Of course,
It's well made. Yeah.
Well, Now we haven't done a Coen film. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I would love to do like a Coen film that I really like at some point.
Like?
Well, like Fargo, you know?
Like Fargo.
I mean, Fargo is amazing.
It's amazing.
You know, and I also like...
Talk about your memorable characters, Rune.
Yeah.
Marge Gunderson.
Yes. Yeah. Also William H. Macy. I'm always thinking of him as this guy from Fargo.
What about John Carroll Lynch as Gunderson's husband?
Yeah. Oh yeah. My God. Also.
He's just eating and. He's saying, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that setting is just great, and that's again like it's a bigger story, and you really get a feel for the scenery, the setting, and the people in it, and it's so slow, it's so extremely slow, and they don't really do much. I mean, Marge Gunderson doesn't do a lot. I mean, she's walking around being pregnant and slowly solving this case, but. Keeping the eye on the important things, like keeping her health and like chatting up the neighbor and stuff like that, you know? Even though they're in the middle of this morbid killing situation. Yeah. But
as an artist, how do you, after you've made Fargo, how do you go on? How do you better that? Can you?
It's a hard really? Thing. Yeah. I mean, maybe that's the problem. I mean, they really set the bar high.
They do.
Yeah. And you can't live up to that all the time. But there's definitely good stuff in here. And, you know, there's also Coen flavor throughout.
It's a lot of good stuff.
Yeah. And it is pretty crazy.
I think it's a well-deserved 4 stars for me. Well-deserved. Yeah.
It is pretty crazy that this kind of stuff is just being released onto Netflix. Like, first day. You know, and everybody with a subscription can watch it in their homes. But that being said, I probably would have liked to see some of the shots here on the big screen.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
The scenery.
And you never know if you actually go to the cinema... and watch this, maybe it would have worked better for me. Maybe I would have been more engaged. Maybe like you just accept the premise in a different way than when you're sitting at home and watching like a collection of short films. Because I didn't see this red thread throughout the movie, other than Mortality and the West.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that was that was it.
That was the Battle of Buster Scruggs.
Yeah, I mean, it took a while.
I don't think we have any idea what to do next time. You mentioned something about a Christmas calendar.
Some Christmas stuff, maybe, because the next time we will have started
releasing
the Christmas...
on 12th, aren't we? Releasing on 12th. And then 26th.
Yeah, around that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So... we'll be like preparing for Christmas. I think we need to do some Christmassy stuff. If anybody has some ideas, please post them to us. Maybe on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
We're up for watching some Christmassy things. You know,
last year we did some French stuff that wasn't really in mainstream. We're not in the mainstream, are we?
Not necessarily. And also looking, like after I told you about this Netflix Christmas Chronicle with Russell Crowe, I looked at it and I'm not
you
that
noticed
excited.
I did not comment on that.
I'm not that excited, really. Yeah, no.
Maybe we can find something. Maybe our listeners can suggest something.
Yeah,
for us
it would
to do.
Be great if we could get some suggestions for this.
Maybe something obscure, maybe something underrated. I don't know. Maybe
the first year of this podcast, we had a Christmas extravaganza, and that was the first time we were actually drinking beer on the show, and it started a trend. So you're never, you don't know what this brings. With it, I mean, maybe something like a new thing for the show, you know.
Who knows?
A Christmas extravaganza. at least you need to stay tuned and listen to the next show. It'll be extremely fun. Yeah,
it'll be interesting.
Yeah, yeah, it'll be interesting. At least.
As always, you can find us anywhere. Well, you found us, so you know what to do. You know, yes. Social media, our website, a beautiful website, maintained by Rune.
Yes.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And we're on Spotify recently, now.
Yeah, on Spotify.
Yeah, we're on Spotify now. You can follow us there. You can follow us on SoundCloud. And you can also leave a 5-star review on iTunes, maybe. And
that'd be good.
Then we'll jump up the charts there. So anything, we'd appreciate it. But yeah, we're also on Facebook, and that's Trekwe who maintains that. And please write him over there. He's eager to reply.
Yeah, I have a social media manager. Yes,
yes,
that's me.
All right, but I guess that's it for this Cohen show. Yeah,
yeah.
Thank you for listening, and we'll see you the 12th of December.
Until next time, bye-bye.